going on, everybody? Welcome in to episode 30 of Lobbing Scorchers. This is Ari Lilienwall. I got producer Noah here with me. Noah, say what's up to the people.
Sorry, Ari. I was a little bit late today. My Uber, it got stuck in traffic, and I just, you know, I couldn't really do anything about it.
Yeah, good topical reference there. As Noah alluded to, we're going to be going over a certain Uber related suspension that took place for the Seattle Sounders as part of just another doozy of an L pod that we're cooking up for you this evening. Unfortunately. Ultimately, the Seattle Sounders' fifth loss in 9 games to start their 2024 season. This time, 2-1 at DC United. So we're gonna stick to our usual routine here. We're gonna do the game review on that, lay down all those takes, and then we're just going to jump into the winners and losers from the latest match day in MLS. And also, we'll be hitting your questions that I've been taking after every game. Once again, always appreciate everyone who submits for those. I know we don't hit all of them on every episode, but it's good to have the discourse flowing, and I'm happy to have my mentions be the place for that, even though, you know, it does sometimes go off the rails a little bit, but that's fine. That's fine. This season's kind of going off the rails, so I think it's actually fair enough. Before we get into all that, though, just quick housekeeping at the top of the show here. I want to thank all of our paid subscribers. We got two new ones after the last episode, which was my first time plugging it. So much appreciated to Andy Hill and Ian Mitchell. Really appreciate you guys becoming our latest paid subs, joining Greg Hoker. That's big time, guys. And we can't emphasize enough here at Lobbing Scorchers how much we appreciate that gesture. And if anyone else wants to join Andy, Ian, and Greg, it's not obligated, but it would be much appreciated. You can do so if you go to podcast.lobbingscorchers.com. There's a little support button with a heart next to it that you can click on, and you can choose to subscribe for however much money you want, whether it's $3, $5, $10, $10,000.
Yeah, I think we'd have to add that one, but that's doable. I mean, you know,
yeah,
contact us.
We can, if you want to pledge $10,000 to Lobby Scorchers, we can certainly arrange that.
And if you're extra lazy, if you click in the show description, there is a thing that says support this show. Click that, it'll take you right there.
There you go.
Even easier.
But once again, thank you and much love to Andy, Ian, and Greg. You guys are awesome for that.
Guys, the Sounders charged my credit card too much money accidentally, so we're gonna need some more subs.
Noah's broke.
Guys, I'm broke. Feed producer Noah.
Oh, and then also, as I did last week, I wanted to plug the new Lobbing Scorchers YouTube page. We're up on YouTube now. All of the shows are getting uploaded there, and we got a few subs after my initial plug on the last episode, which I really appreciate. But we're still only like 19 or 20 subs. We need more subs on YouTube. We want to start growing our presence there, so any subs that we can get on there are also much appreciated. With that out of the way, let's get into this game, Noah, because like I said, this was another doozy. But real quick before that, a news item took place since the last time we recorded, which was that Javier Arriaga has been traded to the New England Revolution. The end of an era. Javi has been on the team for about 5 some odd years now. Through ups and downs, I would say is a fair way to describe Javier Arriaga's tenure on this team. The haul coming back is an international roster spot from the Revs and $75,000 in conditional general allocation money. I think the writing on the wall had been there with this for a while. In fact, someone asked about it in our questions last week, why Javier Arriaga hadn't been moved yet or why he hadn't been moved sooner. Now he's been moved. I think, you know, getting that salary off the books was something that the front office had been looking into for a while here, especially with Nathan getting brought into the team and Jackson Reagan emerging and taking Javi's starting spot. This was going to happen. Now it finally has happened. Javi Arriaga is going from the second to last place team in the Western Conference to... Are the Revs the last place team in the entire league?
I think they're the
tied with
they're
San
tied,
Jose.
Yeah.
Tied with San Jose. So, Javi switching coasts. I mean, I don't think we need to get too into the weeds with that. I think most people saw it coming and understand the reasoning. But I do think, you know, not to clown on him on his way out, but I thought it was kind of funny slash fitting that his last act in a Sounders jersey was a giveaway that led directly to a goal. And I honestly do say that a little bit in jest, because I think since Jackson Reagan became the starter at that position and Javi's playing time had decreased to more of a role player and a depth CB, I thought he played decently well in his appearances. Like that giveaway against Vancouver was like his first bad bungle in a while. And I think that could arguably partially be a function of the fact that he hadn't been playing as many minutes, but you know, I will give him credit for playing well in those short appearances. And overall, you know, I think you could argue that he maybe took a little more heat from the fan base than he deserved. He definitely, when he first got here, there was a lot of defensive errors. But I feel like that got shored up to a reasonable degree in the years after that. And I always thought he was a very good passing center back. Like that was kind of what he brought to the table. But you know, it's a defense first position and that was lacking at times.
Yeah.
So a mixed legacy, I guess, is what I'm saying.
He won CCL with the Sounders. He sure posted online. That was definitely a note of Javi, but you know, I think overall he was he won a lot of trophies with the team.
He did do that. That's a good point. And actually, I saw someone bring it up on Twitter too. He had a really big game in the famous 2019 Western Conference Championship at LAFC, which I still cite as the greatest win in Sounders history. Mm-hmm. And he was big time in that game, and specifically his challenge on Carlos Vela early in that game.
That was nasty.
That was a great challenge, and it was a tone setting moment for that game. And I think it's like kind of, it's fair to wonder if that game plays out differently if you didn't have that kind of tone setting moment. So Javi Arriaga era has come to a close, and that actually ended up, that's a good segue, because it ended up kind of affecting what took place in this game against DC United.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, do you think that what a inconvenient time to be traded away, perhaps?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, so Nathan, who was brought in over the offseason from San Jose, he picked up a hip injury in training. So if Javi was still on the team, he would have been starting in this game. Instead, we got a John Bell cameo, which we'll get into the lineup, but I thought the John Bell cameo actually went pretty well.
Yeah, I'm ringing that bell.
Anyway, let's just get into this game because, I mean, okay. Well, yeah.
Do we have to?
Let's just do it.
They didn't even score multiple goals, Ari. I thought.
I know, it's true, but like their antics merit still merit leading the show.
That's fair.
The Seattle Sounders took their traveling improvisational comedy troupe on the road to Washington, D.C., and unfortunately it did not go especially well. They lost 2-1 to D.C. United and are now 1-5-3 with 6 points and 12th place in the Western Conference. And it started off inauspiciously when, as Noah alluded to at the top of the show, Nuhu got suspended for this game because apparently, Schmetz updated after the game, his Uber got stuck in traffic, which made him late for a team meal and a team meeting, I believe, maybe like a film session. Either way, he was late for a team function. And I mean, this is why I'm kind of calling it a comedy troupe, because you've got all this other stuff going on already. You've got an extremely shorthanded lineup for this East Coast road trip, coming off a game where you managed to get 2 red cards. And now the left back is suspended because he was sitting in Washington, D.C. traffic in his Uber instead of attending the team meetings. So, I mean, it's just like, we're going to get into the lineup, and I was actually excited in some ways when I saw the lineup. But it's just like, okay, that's how we're going to start it off, coming off this debacle of a game where you got 2 red cards and lost at home in a rivalry game that you needed to win.
And lost your two starting center backs.
And lost your two starting center backs. Now the left back is...
center backs, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. The left back got suspended and you don't have him for this game. So, but let's talk about the lineup reaction with that in mind. When this came out, Noah, I was happy to watch this cook.
Yep.
You had Cody Baker starting, which we've been clamoring for on this show, and I think a lot of people have been on that same page. You had John Bell in there, which is kind of a fun new variable, new guy to the team. You hadn't seen him play yet. Let's see what he can do. Sure. You had right back Roldan Christian, that is, which anyone who's followed me on Twitter for a really long time will remember the right back Roldan bit of Christian used to have to emergency fill in at right back with kind of like unexpected frequency. It seemed there would be these situations, you know, when you're in the dog days of the season and you're rotating lineups and stuff. And especially it would happen a lot during games where they would make a sub that would necessitate him dropping back there. And I thought I always had fun with the bit of right back Roland because just the novelty of it, like it's not his position. And then, but it was kind of funny how it worked out because then they drafted his brother, Alex, who ended up getting switched to right back. So you had like an actual starting right back Roldan, which kind of undermined the bit a little bit, but Christian really has not had to do this as much.
Did it undermine the bit years. Or did you like manifest that into being?
I mean, apparently I manifested it because he ended up back there this game with his brother suspended, and it's kind of we are kind of back to the whole just kind of plugging Christian in. This was a thing for years, like back when he was like more consistently playing as a deeper lying midfielder. They would kind of plug him in wherever he played. He played at the 10 a fair amount. He played right back Roldan a fair amount. Played midfield, whatever. He's just a jack of all trades. So we're kind of with the personnel situation this season, we're kind of back to that. I was happy to see right back Roldan for old time's sake. You know, it gave me some nostalgia vibes. And then you also had Moose in this lineup. So I was like, hell yeah. Like let's, you know, you have Rui Diaz resting for this because he has to play in the Philly game coming up on Tuesday. So this was a logical place to start Moose. And Moose has been playing well this year. Like for all the guys that you could name that have been underperforming, Moose is not one of them. He hasn't gotten a lot of minutes, but he's played well in the minutes that he has gotten, and he's scored a goal, and he's looked pretty good. So I was like, okay, you know, this is a little bit of a debacle of a lineup with the new who suspension and right back Roldan and all that. But I'm at least like interested to watch it play. Like it got changed like this out of necessity, but it's sort of what we had been asking for in a way, was just to kind of throw new darts at the wall and see if anything sticks. So I was interested to watch it in that sense.
Yeah.
And Noah, I think the funniest thing about this game and how it played out is that it started off about as well as it possibly could have. They were balling.
Moose and Morris connection looked nasty.
It was looking great. And it got rewarded with an MLS goal. They scored a goal, Noah. And it was on a great buildup. Leo Chu got the finish, but the sequence was very well worked. Albert Rusnak takes the initial shot that sort of starts like it pinging around in the box. It deflects back out to Rusnak. He regathers. Good job to find Jordan out wide. Great assist from Jordan. He puts in a wicked ball and great header from Leo Chu, who was making his return to this. That was another part of the lineup. He was making his return from his, I think, was that a hamstring injury?
Probably. The Sounders.
Probably. Yeah. So Leo Chu finds the score sheet within the first 20 minutes of the game. Leo Chu, you don't really consider him an aerial threat. I think that's the first header he scored in MLS. So it was kind of surprising to see. But great finish. And it was just not how I expected the game to start. Like out of all of the outcomes for the first 20 minutes of the game, Seattle scoring wasn't even on my radar of consideration. I mean, no, like just given the offensive struggles that we've seen this season, combined with the fact that it's a bit of a mix and match lineup, which I was excited to watch, but not like, I'm not going to say I was super confident they were going to be, that they were going to be scoring goals I was thinking of this game as, you know, if you can get out of here 0-0, 1-1, that's probably a good result given the circumstances. And I definitely thought it would probably be a bit of a grind to get to any goal that did occur. I was surprised to see how good that they looked off rip. And for them to actually create, I mean, I wasn't shocked to see them create that chance, but I was surprised to see them finish it that clinically.
I was, you know, I mean, I was on Twitter posting, as I normally do, posting my L's mostly, but I saw the lineup and I was actually pretty stoked about it. Like, I thought this had more attacking threat than any lineup they had put out this year, simply because, like, and they were talking about this, shout out KJR, they were talking about this on KJR about how, like, no one has seen Moose play or start. No one has seen this wrinkle. Chu's just coming back. You have all this stuff. It's basically like you can't really even prep for this because no one had any idea this was coming. And, you know, DC's a little bit fraudulent. They have incredibly incredible player in Benteke, but, like, you know, their defense isn't anything, like, amazing. They're not bad, but it's nothing amazing. And you had Jordan, who's been playing incredible. Atencio is back in the lineup. He balled out this game, which I'm sure we'll keep talking about. But I don't know. I saw Moose, I saw Jordan, and I saw Leo, and I thought this is an attacking threat that, like, is scrappy enough in this moment and in this game where, like, those dudes want it. They'll get it done. And I honestly thought they were gonna win this game when I saw that lineup. And maybe they would have if, well, you know.
Yeah, interesting. I guess I'm a little more jaded than that at this point. Like, the cynicism is kind of taking over. But I mean, I'll give them credit for how well that they started the game. They got the goal, and the vibes were good. Unfortunately, they got chalked in the aftermath of that goal about as fast as the vibes can possibly get chalked. I mean, first of all, you know, when you get an early goal on the road like that, a lot of the times there's going to be a wave of pressure that you have to absorb in the aftermath of that, because the home team is going to be pushing for an equalizer they just got scored on. And I felt like that was the case here, and the game state shifted pretty heavily in favor of DC United after the goal scored. Stephen Fry had to make a really, that was probably his best save of the season.
Oh, absolutely.
Ironically enough,
yeah, absolutely.
Considering the events that, that took place after it. But, that was also reflective, I think, of how the game was going after Seattle opened the scoring. But, like, they had absorbed it without conceding to that point.
The beginning of that game was, I think DC was also on the front foot a little bit. They were pushing the gas as hard as they could to try and break them open early and dictate that tempo. And the Sounders did a really good job of controlling that up until they scored.
So yeah, exactly. But, I mean, so the first vibe chalking moment came actually before the red card, which was that the Moose got injured.
Yep.
Which that was...
Did his hammy, baby.
It was just... I think it was a hip.
But, oh, yeah, it was a hip.
Either way, that was a pretty just... it's just like an are you kidding me moment. The lineup that you have out there is playing well. You actually, for once, get rewarded with a goal for it. You're winning 1-0, and then... You have a player who, you know, I think a lot of us were excited to watch and see what he could bring to the table, given how he's played this season, get injured. And it's just like a facepalm, like, God, like, why? So best wishes to Moose. That was unfortunate to see. He was understandably pissed about it as he left the field. And I haven't heard any update on what the injury, like the status of it is, or the prognosis or your timeline. He was walking around, but yeah. I don't know. Like, yeah, well, I guess we'll find out next week.
I think in the post-game presser, Brian kind of, I don't think he outright said it, but maybe he alluded that it was a little bit more cautious in terms of the pulling him, but okay. I could have been reading into the way that he delivered his response.
Okay.
In the incorrect
way, let's hope that's the case and we get to see Moose back on the field soon. But either way, he had to come off here. So the sub that took place after Moose came off was Obed came on for him in the 21st minute, and Jordan shifted over to the 9 spot. So Obed was playing like higher up the field. He was playing some right mid in this game.
Yeah.
Which I mean, we can talk about that a little bit later, but I actually thought he had some nice moments. It was kind of fun to see him in a little more of an attacking role, where he was more kind of tasked with making things happen in attack. And I seem to remember him generating a couple of decent little chances. So I thought that actually came off pretty well. The defining moment of this game, unfortunately, was another red card, this time to Stephen Fry in the 28th minute, just before the half hour mark. So we're going to break down this play, divvy out the blame, and just give our takes on this. So what happened was, what precipitated it was a long ball into the box that saw Cody Baker in a one-on-one in the air with Jared Stroud.
Not a player you want to be one-on-one with.
Yeah, and this was a bit of a welcome to MLS moment for Cody Baker. So that's the first thing I think to address on this play. I mean, he gets bodied off the ball by Jared Stroud and goes to ground. And at that point, Jared Stroud keeps his footing and he's in a one-on-one with Fry. And I mean, with the way that he controlled the ball, he was going to round him easily. And the first thing I want to say about this is that I don't blame, and I'm not going to harp on Cody Baker at all. As people who were pining for Cody Baker to start and get more minutes with this team and who have liked what he's brought to the table so far this season, sometimes with a young player like that, these are the moments that you have to live with. Like, yep. There are going to be growing pains like that. There's going to be moments like that. That's just the reality of working in an academy kid like this. So I'm not going to sit here on one hand and advocate for him to get more minutes, and then when those learning moments and those growing pains happen, bag on him for it. Like, that is, but that also, I mean, I talked about this when I was trying to kind of caution the Cody Baker hype a little bit as a purveyor of it. I was also trying to caution that, like, you are making a little bit of a trade there where you might have moments like that defensively where, you know, if that's Nuhu right there, you know, he would probably have been out of position. But
he would not have been there. But
if you grant for the sake of argument that he would have been in position on that play, which I realize might be a little bit of a stretch, but if you do grant that, I don't think that he gets bodied off the ball there. So this is the kind of trade that I was talking about that you might have to make.
Absolutely.
But anyway, so after Cody Baker got bodied off the ball by Jared Stroud, Stephen Fry was left with two truly terrible options. He could let Jared Stroud round him and let him score, or he could do what he ended up trying to do, which was, I think he was trying to make a play on the ball. Like, and I think that's what he was arguing to the ref, is that he was coming off his line to try and get to the ball. But in the process of doing that, he took down Jared Stroud in the box for what was pretty clearly, very clearly, a dog-so red card and a penalty kick.
It's just silly.
Like, okay, in that situation, I realize that it's tough and it's easy to say, you know, from our chairs here, like, what he should have done. But I mean, I think in that situation, you have to just let him round you and score the equalizer.
Absolutely.
Because, like, the alternative is the dog-so red card that gets you thrown out of the game and puts you down a man again with so much time left in the match. So out of the two truly terrible options that he had, he picked the worst one. That he should not have taken.
Just silly. Why?
And it's just like, this team has three red cards now in the last two games. The Jackson Reagan one, I mark that up as more of a freak occurrence where he's going into a challenge that, you know, I was saying that he should be more thoughtful about whether he goes into that challenge to begin with, but I think it's a little bit of a freak play. But
yeah,
these last two red cards that this team has picked up, the one on Alex Roldan in the Vancouver game, and now this one on Fry, these are just avoidable situations. The Alex Roldan one was an act of frustration where he was lashing out, let his emotions get the best of him. This Fry one is just, I mean, it's just not, it's
lack of poise.
Yeah, it's lack of poise. It's not the smart play to make in that situation. And even more so because you were ahead at this point in the game. If it's a different point in the game and maybe you're down a goal or whatever, or maybe you have a bigger lead. I don't know. If the circumstances are different, maybe you think about that differently. But you're ahead. You're ahead. If Jared Stroud scores there, it's 1-1, and you've got all 11 guys, and you still got a chance to get a result in the game. And as soon as you take the dog so red card, it's probably chalked. It actually, when we're going to talk about this, it actually didn't end up being as chalked as I thought it was going to be. As soon as that happened, I was like, okay, well, I mean, this is over. There's literally 0% chance you take a result in this game. And they actually got reasonably close to pulling a point out of this game. But it's you just make it a very, very difficult mountain to climb as the road team in this game, getting a dog so red card to your goalkeeper with that much time left on the clock. It just makes it a borderline impossible task, really, is how I felt about it.
Yeah. I don't understand, as the leader of the team, as the captain of the team, as someone who is the most senior on the team, how you're going to sit there and say on one hand, nah, the vibes are good, like, I believe this team can do anything, and then make a very clear desperation play. You are in DC, on the road, up 1-0. No one gives a shit if you win. It's awesome if you win. They care if you take points home and not get a red in that situation, because what you're giving up, like you were saying, you're either giving up a goal and it's still 1-1. You still have 11 players on the field. You still have the rest of the game to equalize, or fuck it, bunker and take your point home. And that every point matters. Every point matters.
Yeah, I mean, they need to start racking him. Having watched this replay several times, like, he should not have done what he did, but it is a hard decision to make in that moment, because, you know, it's not like you don't want to let him score if you feel like there is a chance that you could have prevented it. And I don't like the replay, or when I watched it live, it looked like he was just tackling Jared Stroud just to tackle him and stop him. But having watched the replay, he is coming off his line and reaching down for the ball and then hitting Stroud and taking him down while doing that, which is still a dog so and still a red. But I guess I can see the thought process a little bit more, even if the outcome was horrendous. And, like, with the benefit of hindsight, it's you just have to let him round you and score the equalizer.
I think it's silly, though. It's like, you are one of the most senior goalkeepers in the entire league,
and it's fair to expect him to make the right decision in that situation. I mean, this is an MLS Cup MVP, one of the best players who's ever played for the team, one of the best goalkeepers in MLS history. I mean, I don't blame you or anyone else for being tilted about it, because it was certainly poor decision making in that situation. But he was put in as bad a position as a defender can put a goalkeeper in.
Sure, so, but you know you're one-on-one, and you know what happens when you take down a player one-on-one, and you know what happens when you go for a ball, regardless of if you get the player or the ball. The player is going to probably go down if it's in the box. It's just like, you've been playing this game your entire life. He's damn near 40 years old. Like, let's be honest. Like, that was a lapse in his judgment. Does it mean he's a bad player? Absolutely not. Does it mean he should sit? Absolutely not. He should still be our starter. But that was a lapse of judgment, and I think that it shows a lot more the desperation mentality, the bad side of the desperation mentality that the Sounders have gotten themselves into with that red card and with the last Roldan red card.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, that situation on its own in isolation, you know, shit happens sometimes, but when you pile it on with everything else, including the coming off a game where you already got two red cards, you're just like, you're getting guys thrown out of the games every week. And you're not giving yourself a chance to get out of this funk if you're playing. I mean, I should have looked this up, but, like, if you added up the amount of minutes that they've played down a man the last two games, it's like most of the games. And it's like, everyone knows that you can't win games like that. So, I mean, there's definitely that element of the game deserves the clowning and the criticism, without a shadow of a doubt. But, frankly, they actually played pretty well in the aftermath of the red card. So I will give credit for how they played with 10 men. They didn't give up. For most of the second half, they actually controlled the game and were on the front foot. And they had several great chances to equalize and take a point, which, you know, I don't know how much encouragement you can take in that, because you still lost the game and you've only won one game out of nine this season. But I mean, that's better than capitulating and letting it get out of control, kind of like they did in the Vancouver game. And, but it almost, you know, it almost makes it more frustrating, because you feel like the result, if not all 3 points, was very attainable in this game had they been able to play the entire game with 11 men. And it's just very frustrating that they've been unable to really give themselves that chance. Christian Benteke scored both of DC United's goals in this game. We talked about him before the game. He converted the penalty kick that Jared Stroud won. And he scored a header pretty soon after the red card, or it was right before halftime.
Yeah,
it was in the 45th minute.
Yeah.
He's probably the best in the league at that right now. Like, I don't know what striker I would take in the air over Benteke. He's pretty fun to watch, but I mean, this game, honestly, overall, I would say kind of lowered my opinion of DC United. They got pretty lucky to not squander the win, I would say. And, they didn't, there was like a pretty stark gap, I think, like between how they played of a man and how Vancouver did. I mean, Vancouver, the Whitecaps, they cooked. They handled the being up a man exactly how you're supposed to, like pretty textbook. DC let Seattle back into it and got pretty lucky to win this game. There was a few chances here. Atencio hit one off the post. Mm-hmm. Rusnak had a header late that the goal that Alex Bono made a really good save on. The one that killed me though, Noah, was the one that Christian missed right at the end, where Obed makes a nice play to get in from the right side. He sends the cross in, and Christian has a pretty wide open look that he didn't convert. And that, I mean, that, I think that was the chance right there. The Rusnak one was not a super high percentage chance. It was a good header, and Bono had to make a good save. But the Christian one, the XG on that was probably through the roof, man.
It's probably like 25 XG or something. Like 40 or 50.
Unfortunately. So, I guess, you know, if there is anything positive to take away from this game, is that I thought the effort was there. I thought they generated some good looks. And overall, I mean, it felt kind of like last year's team in the whole, like, generating a lot of chances but not being able to finish them kind of way. So that's not necessarily a good thing or a positive, but, you know, it's better than the kind of complete meltdown that we saw against the Whitecaps.
Yeah, so, I mean, they still had 12 shots. I mean, they had the same number of shots as DC. Like, I don't know. What do you take from that? That the offense is like producing something? It's like hard to say, but like, awesome. The offense kind of got cooking with this lineup, and now the defense is just like, well, yeah.
I mean, and it was good to see them score a goal, and it was good to see Leo Chu score a goal specifically. You know, if Seattle is going to get out of this, like, slide that they're in, you know, Leo Chu becoming consistently productive would be a massive help to that.
Yeah.
So, you know, his Sounders career continues to be up and down. He had the injury, but I mean, this is kind of what I was going to bring up with this. You know, there's a select few guys on this team that I don't blame for what's taking place this season. And I would put Leo Chu in that category. I would put Moose in that category. And I would put Obed and Atencio in that category, and Cody Baker. I think everyone.
What about Paul Rothrock? Hold on. You're missing Paul Rothrock.
Paul Rothrock just hasn't had enough minutes, yeah, man. Like, I would love to have him have enough of a sample size to be able to say that. But out of the guys who have been playing regularly, that group I just named, literally everyone else outside of those guys, I think you could make a case.
Even Jordan? Has
underperformed to a certain extent. Even Jordan, yeah. Like, the Jordan, whether Jordan is in form or not, is, I mean, that's determined by the stat sheet, and he has one goal this season, and I don't think that's necessarily a function of him playing badly individually. I think he's a player that needs like service and to combine with other players to be effective, and you could say that it's not his fault that he's not getting that, but like, he's also like the Galaxy game, like if he finishes that goal, they take a point in that game. There's True. Been a couple of other really good chances that he's had that he hasn't finished. So I think he would probably even tell you that like his form this season has been below the standard that he expects of himself and that we all expect from him, knowing what type of player he can be. I mean, like, you could just go down the list, Rui Diaz, I think, you know, he's got his three penalty kick goals, but he only has one goal outside of that, which was a pretty low percentage chance. So again,
bro just blasted
like,
that.
Yeah. Like a lot of it is due to not getting service, but the fact remains that everyone in the attack is not producing on the stat sheet at the clip that they need to be. So whose fault that is kind of irrelevant. But like, I get the point I'm making is that, like, there's just the list of guys that are playing below the level that is expected and necessary for this team to do what it wants to do is too lengthy of a list. And like, it extends to the defense too. I think every guy on the back line has underperformed to an extent. Stephen Fry, he got injured and I think has been good outside of the red card last night, but like that was a really bad red card to take. And it's the first red card of his MLS career. You know that? He's never gotten one.
Really?
Yeah. So like, I mean, I think I would put him in that category. And listen, I don't think I'm saying anything with that take that any of the players wouldn't acknowledge themselves. Like, I mean, and it's reflected in their record, like 1-5-3, like I guarantee you no one in the locker room and no one on the coaching staff is head over heels about where this team is at right now. So,
I think
it's too many guys that are underperforming on both sides of the ball.
It's also luck too, I feel like, in a sense. Like, there have been some really unlucky moments. Like,
for sure.
They have
for
not
sure.
had any breaks, let's just say that. Like,
yeah.
Is it a team that is underperforming and is not doing well and is having an identity crisis and is, like we've talked about before, in the worst transitionary period in modern Sounders history? Absolutely. But they haven't had any breaks either.
That's a fair point. And, like, I don't think it's definitely not a situation where you can attribute it all to bad luck.
But no.
Their
no.
luck has been disgustingly bad.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't know if, you know, I do think every team does go through those phases sometimes where it feels like nothing is going your way. And this happens to be a phase where nothing is going their way combined with a ton of injuries and underperformance and all that. So it's all kind of come together to create where they stand, which is 12th place in the Western Conference. I wanted to read a little nugget from my MLSsoccer.com cohort, the armchair analyst, Matthew Doyle. He dropped a column today on MLSsoccer.com that's kind of assessing where every team in the league stands through the quarter point of the season, which I think the way he kind of frames it is like, that's a small sample size, but it's enough to look at and kind of not draw definitive conclusions, but just take kind of a pulse check on where everyone in the league stands. This is what he wrote about Seattle. So I'm just going to read it off, and then we're going to just talk about if we agree with this with his assessment on the state of affairs. Because I do think it's interesting to look at what the national pundit class has to say, because they're looking at it from a different perspective. You know, we live and breathe this team. We follow it every day. We watch every single game, every minute of every single game. And the national pundit class, they're more keeping track of everything. So like, their perspective is going to be different from ours. And I'm just going to read what Doyle wrote for the how they got here section on Seattle. He said, as per head coach Brian Schmetzer, this is the lowest the club's been in the MLS era, and that was before this weekend's loss. Here's the whole of it. Age and injuries have depleted all four lines, from forward all the way back to goalkeeper. They've still done a decent job of creating chances, but none of the guys on the front line have finished them. They still have done a decentish job of limiting chances, but not good enough to pitch shutouts and turn losses into draws. Their biggest offseason move for Argentine winger Pedro de la Vega has not yet paid off, as he's been injured for basically the whole season. Raul Ruiz Diaz's age-related regression last year looks like a permanent thing. Jordan Morris is as streaky as ever, and Christian Roldan is never going to be a regular goal threat. What's next? Doyle says, unlike the other teams in this neighborhood, the Sounders, I think, have the pieces and the game model to climb up the ladder. They're nowhere near as bad as their record. The underlying numbers largely agree. They're probably going to have to make a hard decision on Ruiz Diaz this summer. His contract is ending in December, and while he's forever a legend in Rave Green, he's probably not going to justify that DP tag or that starting spot anymore. So I guess my first takeaway from that is, you know, the national pundit take on Ruiz Diaz as going through age-related regression, looking like a permanent thing, and then they're going to have to make a hard decision on him. I mean, that was something that we've been talking about, even dating back to the preseason, like how much longer
can
you
ride?
Even last year, like how much longer can you ride Raul as a DP? And, you know, I see it a little bit differently than Doyle. Like, I think there's been stretches of this season where Raul has looked like his old self. I mean, the goal he scored against Montreal, that was vintage. But I mean, it hasn't been consistent enough, and he's not putting the ball in the back of the net at the clip that you need out of a designated player number nine, like he has for years for this team when he's been healthy. Raul's been nothing if not consistent. He's one of the most efficient goals per 90 players like that's played in the league in this last like era of strikers that have come into the league, but he's not producing at that clip right now, and I think that Doyle is spot on with that, and I think he's right that that decision is probably going to have to come soon, because I think if you had a number nine that was producing at the clip that Raul used to, that would probably solve a lot of the problems, because I think Doyle is also right that, and this is, I've been saying this, Noah, and like, you know, you might not want to hear it. The anti-stats people might not want to hear it, but when the national pundits who have no emotional interest in this team, when they analyze the performances as compared to the results, they're seeing some of the same stuff that I see when I watch this team play last year and have at times this year, which is a team that's actually playing pretty good ball at times, but just not finishing the chances that they do create. And it's definitely frustrating to watch. But the thing that I take from that is that if you can play good ball like that and just finish at a more efficient clip, you could actually, you know, you could get out of this. Mm-hmm. That's the path out of it. But I don't really know if the forwards that they have right now, whoever is starting at the nine, whether you want to start Raul, Jordan, or Moose, can finish at the rate necessary. No. We've seen it not take place over such a large sample size now, you know, to the point where maybe the personnel has to change at that spot in order to get that production there where you need it. Cause
absolutely
right now it's not there. And like, I was hoping that De La Vega would help solve a lot of that, but I almost feel like, you know, like his biggest asset ostensibly is his chance creation.
Correct.
And the reality is, like, even in this DC game, the chance creation was pretty good. Like, yeah, even without De La Vega, they just couldn't finish.
Roldan was cooking like insanely. And same with Atencio. Atencio and they were cooking, but like, what was there to finish? I agree with basically everything that was said here. I think I disagree with, they've probably played one full game of good soccer, like two separate halves of good soccer, maybe one and a half. But I think the system is not the problem. People want to hate me for this or hate on Ari for this take, which we both share, is Brian Schmetzer's not the problem. It's that they have terrible personnel depth right now. We're seeing that, like, it's just not something that you can... rely on an aging striker to fix and get you out of a hole. Like, I think they did that a lot in the years they were really successful. They had Nico, a 10, kind of like Pedro de la Vega in a chance creator. And then you had Raul, who was just like, oh yeah, give me a 0.00001 XG chance and I'm going to bam that in. But like, that's because people are worried about all of these other talented players on the field. It feels like every single week we're hobbling together a lineup where there's really just, we're just waiting for the next thing to happen. We're waiting for the next window. And I know Craig Weibel has been in Europe or wherever. He's on a mission to find someone to sign, but you have to buy Raul out. He cannot be on this roster when the summer comes. I don't care. It's time. I love Raul. I want him to hang his jersey in the rafters. Like, he's an incredible player, but I think he would admit to you that like he just can't contribute to the level that the Sounders need to be competitive in a modern day MLS.
I mean, I don't think he would admit that. I read a feature story on him that we had on the website by John Arnold recently, and you know, he was headstrong that he can play at the level that he once did, and that was his biggest goal this season.
Freddie Montero said that too.
It hasn't manifested yet. And they are kind of running out of time for it to come good, and not even just to put it all on Raul, just with this whole offense.
Yeah.
Like it's definitely like, I definitely don't want to make it sound like I'm putting it all on the striker or even just the forward group as a whole. Like, they haven't been scoring enough goals, but like, I guess the chance creation has been good in spurts, but not really consistently.
Correct.
And there's just been too much up and down and not enough consistently playing at the level that they need to generate more on offense. And then you also, you throw on top that you're now picking up a minimum of one red card per game over the last couple of weeks. And that just makes it impossible to get out of all the stuff we're talking about, like off rip, like before you even get to anything else. Like, if you don't have all 11 guys on the field for the game, you're probably not going to take a result, and that goes for any game.
But I don't think it should be understated the importance of a goal scorer, a finisher, a nine, because I'm not going to say that DZ is bad by any stretch, but they're no better than the Sounders. They just have Benteke, who is like this looming threat and will convert and can, you know, on mistakes. And it's like, that's soccer, period. But like, having a goal scorer or two goal scorers or threat, whatever, it is important. It's the most important, because this team, they showed, yes, we can win things with a lack of incredible quality goal scoring by switching up to be defensive, but we're not going to win the league. We're not going to do any of this stuff. It was like, we'll make it to the playoffs. We go LAFC, you know, we lose, whatever. Like, that was still a pretty successful season being defensive minded, but like, we are not going to compete with Inter Miami without a striker.
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk about that later. I don't know if anyone's competing with Inter Miami this year, but anyway, the good news, Noah, is that they now have to play the Philadelphia Union on this coming Tuesday at Subaru Park, which is super awesome. It's the makeup game for the game that got rained out a few weeks ago. The Sounders famously went to Philadelphia to play the Philadelphia Union at Subaru Park a couple weeks ago, and that one did not go well. I would, as bad as this DC game went, I would say that Philly game actually went worse because they didn't even play it because it got rained out and there were guys on the field with mops that tried their best to clear it off, but
they were working
shockingly
hard.
It did not quite work because it just kept raining and the field got wet again. So they're gonna have to make that game up. They have to play with the exact same personnel, as I understand it, that they had in the previous game.
Minus Javi.
So, yeah, minus Javi. But, like, so Raul is going to, like, he was starting that game. So he's going to have to go right back out there on Tuesday. So we'll pray for his hamstring. So the Philly Union, they just lost their first home game on Saturday in over a year to Real Salt Lake. I was watching a little bit of that game. It was 1-1 until the dying moments of the game. And then Real Salt Lake scored a, like, insane banger game winner at the last minute. So like, you could look at that two ways. Like, you could look at it like they finally lost one and maybe that means they're vulnerable, or I kind of tend to look at it like the fact that they lost one means they're probably not losing two in a row.
No.
This is one of the most dominant home teams in MLS over the last 3-4 years under Jim Curtin. Like they not only do they not lose at home, but their stats and their goal differential are absurd. They're far and away better than anyone else over like the last 3-4 year sample size.
That and so, I mean, let's be real, the Seattle Sounders are like nowhere close to the quality of Real Salt Lake right now. So
the Philly Union, you mean?
They played. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. That's true by the standings. All right. Well, let's get into questions, Noah, if you have those pulled up. Thank you to everyone who submitted. We'll riff on these as many as we can real quick before we get into winners and losers and then call it a wrap here for episode 30. That sound good?
Absolutely. Thank you all for the questions. Let's get into it. First of all, my own question, because I think this is very pressing. We haven't talked enough about how the death of Live Durs, this club has died since then. So what do you think,
Ari? 1-5-3 since Live Durs was unceremoniously executed. I mean, the numbers, the record speaks for itself.
I'm not a stats guy, but I have to agree with that. What does Leo Chu have to do to start after Philly?
I mean, he's been injured. Like, so I think there was question about his starting spot before he got injured, just when especially when De La Vega was healthy. It's like, how do you fit all these guys in? And Leo Chu was thought by many to be the odd man out. But then the reason he hasn't been playing wasn't because he got benched, just because he got injured.
Yeah.
And with their injury situation now, I imagine he will be playing quite a bit.
That does make sense. I agree. And I thought, let's hope he comes back in waves and strong.
That would help matters a lot.
It would. The vibes would be better for sure. I understand we're in Philly Tuesday night, but do these potential changes not seem very odd? Obed coming on at right mid when Moose goes down. Why not bring on Tevez? Also, side note, Paul on as like for like with Cody at left back. Has Paul ever played there before?
I mean, those are good questions. I thought Obed, I mean, I don't know about you, maybe I'm tripping, but I thought Obed at right mid actually held his own and looked pretty good. Like, they played pretty well on offense with him playing there. I would legitimately go so far as to say that I thought he looked better and more effective playing there higher up the field than he does in his normal midfield spot.
Yeah,
like I honestly think that that might be a hot take, but like that was legitimately what I thought watching how that played out.
Yeah, I think he's tend to be thought of as a defensive JP like right. figure, but I thought his movement was interesting on the right mid, and like I thought
the one that Christian missed, like he created that chance.
Yeah, he blasted that. Yeah, no, I agree with you. I wouldn't mind seeing him out there again, putting Jordan at the nine. I don't know. I mean, I'm not a Jordan nine guy, but I don't know. Who knows about that? Is this the most disappointing stretch of ball in Sounders history?
I mean, it's definitely up there. Like, we were talking about it last week, and there's a couple other stretches of ball that you could put up with it. Like, the 2016 comes to mind, and they've had really tough and unlucky and unproductive runs of form before. So it's not like the first time that this has happened. And it's not even the first time that they've had a bad run of form under Schmetz. I honestly do put what we're seeing right now, like up with any of them. Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty bad. Does our play in this game suggest that we would have more chances with a more chaotic style of play and flexible formation?
I don't know. I feel like the 4-2-3-1 has been simple and effective over the years. And they tried changing the formation to the 4-4-2 earlier this season. That didn't work. And this team, I don't think this team is built for chaos ball like that. You kind of need a specific type of roster build, Like when I think of Chaos Ball and MLS, I think of like the Red Bulls and San Jose when they're not as bad as they are this year. Like they used to, especially in the Matias Almeida years, he was all about Chaos Ball. Their roster build isn't really like that. Like it's more of a Seattle's roster builds are traditionally more like hyper technical, like I'm going to break you down, control pace, control tempo, hit long balls, hit switches, like stuff like that, more than just like energy drink you like the Red Bulls would.
Yeah, which I think is interesting too, because Brian noted at his post game that the reason that this team has not been doing well in certain situations, giving up a goal, the second goal, is just because they refuse to control tempo at all. They're like, he was like, we're not controlling tempo. We're not doing a good job at that, which I don't know if I completely agree with him. Maybe in the first half, absolutely. But that second half, when they were ripping, that's what they were doing, and they were doing it well.
And that's when I think of the Sounders at their best. That's what they've been so good at over the years. Like, man, like I remember watching during the CCL run where they won it. It was master classes in that stuff, man. Like they controlled tempo and game state so well. It was a clinic, man.
Yeah.
And like, I think their biggest asset under Schmetz has been their ability to do that stuff. And I do think part of what's kind of gone wrong this year is that there's been, and last year too, at times, to be honest, they were losing control of game states a lot more than we're typically used to seeing out of a Seattle team.
I thought that when Pedro was playing in his, one or two matches or 15 seconds that he played, you could feel the calmness that he brought that helped with the rest of the team controlling that tempo better. Like, I thought that he was a really good dictator of that, and I'm hopeful that when he comes back, they sign another nine. That, like, if they get that interplay going, like, that's just going to be such a big confidence boost to calm a lot of people down, because I think there's a lot of rash decisions being made in the attacking movement when they're down 1-0 or more, that, like, you got to realize you're not going to be good by just completely counterattacking and pushing and pushing. You got to move the ball, break them down.
Yeah, and one last thing on that before we hit the next one. Like, that all the stuff we're talking about is JP's biggest strong suits.
Yes.
And I think that as you get a greater sample size of games with JP back fit, that's something that you can reasonably hope and expect to improve.
I agree with that. Speaking of larger sample sizes and more games to get people reps, the Open Cup, how do you handle that, Ari? What do we do? What's going to happen?
I haven't looked at exactly what the schedule is yet, but I'm assuming there's going to be massive fixture congestion. So you're always going to have to rotate during that tournament anyway. I know some people don't like it and they want all MLS teams or Seattle to like prioritize it heavily and play a Rui Diaz in those games and stuff. To me, I think, especially with how the league season is going, and just the fact that it's an opportunity where you can maybe get some guys minutes that aren't normally getting him during the league season. Like, I would love to see them just let Paul Rothrock loose during the Open Cup, let some of the Defiance guys loose. Remember Braudilio?
Yeah.
Maybe, I don't know what the status of his hamstring is, but like,
I think it's still chalked.
That's
for now.
Actually, I don't want to go on like a whole side tangent
that,
but I just like remembered him. He was insane for Defiance last year.
Yeah, he was nasty.
And he's got a really cool story. He's like a Division II player who worked his way up and made the pros and got an MLS contract. And, I mean, he's disgusting.
Like, yeah, he's good.
In MLS Next, he was dominant. And I didn't figure he would be like a huge part of the team this year. But like, I think Open Cup, if he's healthy, like that would be a perfect time to get a guy like that. And maybe you see something where you're like,
yeah,
maybe this could spark the first team. Unlikely that Braudilio is the answer to much, but I don't know. Like,
he's got the grit to be able to help, with the mentality.
It's worth finding out. So yeah, that's how I would handle the Open Cup.
Yeah. Congestion wise, we play Philadelphia on Tuesday and then You play the Galaxy on Sunday. That next Wednesday, you play in the Open Cup. And then that next Sunday, you're in Portland. And then the next Wednesday, you're playing Salt Lake. And then the next Saturday, you're playing Vancouver. So you've got a lot of fixtures coming up here.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be chaos. Oh my God, they have so many games coming up.
Yeah.
It's no rest for the weary.
No, we will not shy away from any of these. If we make it through this road trip without any points, is Schmetzer gonzo?
I mean, so that's another one that came up a lot. So we can do our weekly Schmetz status update. I mean, honestly, I've been pretty firmly on the train that firing the coach in a situation like this feels a little pointless to me. And especially when you have a coach that is as proven as Schmetz and that has won as many trophies as Schmetz, with the knowledge that, you know, all eras like this come to an end eventually. But like for me in this situation in particular, I don't think that it's going to change much if you fire the coach. But I mean, what I will say is that when you have L's that, the types of L's that they've taken the last 2 weeks, where you have lapses and disciplines in discipline, you have red cards, you have guys doing stuff that's a little like just losing the plot, losing control. That's where it starts to warm up a little bit. And I think, like, given how these last couple games have gone, like the seat is warm. Like, yeah. It's at least warm. I don't know if it's hot.
Yeah.
But it's like warm.
If you press, you know, the like you've got the seat heater and it's got the three indicator lights.
Right.
Is it like on the number one?
Yes.
You're on level one.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're on the low. You're on the low heated seat. All right. Last but not least, can a Pedro de la Vega return help this club get out of a funk?
Yeah. Like I mean, they better hope that it does. That was like the whole point of the signing. But I do think from what little I watched of him before he got injured, I mean, he's clearly very talented. And I do think that while, like, going back to what Doyle was talking about the underlying performances and the chance generation not being as bad as the record, like, injecting a player that's ostensibly as dynamic as Pedro de la Vega, that theoretically should help you generate even more chances, to where just by pure volume of the chances that you're generating, you would hope to finish a few more. Now, based on the finishing that we've seen from this team this season, that's definitely not a guarantee, but I think there is solid reason to believe that he would help with that. And that's, I mean, a lot of whether this team can get out of this season is going to be based on that exact question.
That's all the questions for this week. Remember to scream in Ari's mentions this Wednesday.
I guess Tuesday night.
Tuesday night. Okay, I thought it was, I don't know why I said Wednesday. Whatever the day is. Who cares? Who wants to watch the Sounders twice in a week right now? I know, not me.
It's funny that we get to watch another one in 2 days from now. And we're actually going to do midweek pod
after that game.
So definitely tune in for that. Let's get to winners and losers from the rest of the match day slate in MLS and then get out of here, Noah.
Hell yeah.
My first loser for the week, Sporting Kansas City, the club of professional wrestling enthusiasts, lost 2-1 to Minnesota United, which, you know, that's honestly, I mean, Minnesota United's good. They were on the road. It's whatever. But the reason they're making this category this week is their head coach, Peter Vermees. He actually, did you see this? No, he took a visual aid to his post-game press conference where it was like an iPad and it had the offside line on the game winner that Minnesota United scored. And it supposedly showed the guy like 0.3 inches offside, and he was talking about how they got robbed. Like, Like, shout out to Peter Vermes for giving us red hot coach press conference.
Always,
he's always good for one. But I just always think it's so funny when coaches do that. Like, you're really hedging it on like this very, very marginal borderline offside call that really, like, when you look at it, you could squint at it. You could make a case either way. It definitely wasn't super obvious. And he's like showing this iPad to the reporters at the press conference. Like, it's this big like dunk that proves that the officiated and screwed them over. Like, I guess I get why coaches do that. It maybe makes the loss look a little better, but I mean, come on. Like, it, if he was offside, it was barely.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
I think it was funny. I think if it was in the opposite way, he would also be holding up the same iPad being like, we were wrong.
Exactly.
That should have been a goal. Yeah. And the best part of that clip is he takes the iPad and just chucks it on the table next to him. Like, he just throws it.
I only
it.
Saw the picture. I didn't see
yeah,
that.
Yeah, no, the
I got to dive in.
Better.
I got to dive into that Peter V press conference. It sounds like good stuff. Yeah. But I'm also going to put Minnesota United in this category for this game. Because have you been following the Emmanuel Reynoso saga at all?
I've kept up enough.
All right, I'll give you the update. I mean, he's gone missing again. He went again. It's crazy that I have to say again there. He went back down to Argentina to like get his green card, I guess, and then didn't show up for the like meeting that you have to go to get that taken care of.
He loves doing that. That's his favorite thing to do.
This is the third time he's done it.
Yeah.
This is one of the most bizarre things I've seen in MLS. And every time he goes down there and goes AWOL, they're trying to call him and contact him, and he's not responding. They're booking flights for him to get back, to get him back with the team. He's missing the flights. I really, like, I don't know if I've ever seen anything quite like this in professional sports, like, let alone MLS. I don't know if I've seen it happen one time. He's done it like three times.
Yeah.
And this is one of the most talented, in terms of raw talent, one of the most talented players in the league when he's healthy. I always kind of refer to him as the best pure passer in the league.
Easily.
In terms of just like assist mavens. Reynoso is nasty. And like, he's kind of been the centerpiece of that team. It's sort of been a situation with them where when he plays, they're an upper tier team in the West. When he doesn't, they're mid team at best. And to their credit, they're upper tier on the table in the West right now, with having not played with him for most of this season. But it's just a wild situation. And like, they're going to have to, like, I have to imagine they're going to move on from him after this. And in fact, I'm pretty confident that's what's going to happen, because,
dude, but Minnesota, nice. Come on. They might just be like,
what they've been trying to do. But the reason that I think this might be the straw that broke the camel's back is because Michael Boxall, one of their players, gave an interview either at training or after a game or something. And he was literally like, look, we're tired of talking about this. He's made it abundantly clear that he doesn't really care about the club at this point, and we're kind of approaching it like he's not going to be here, and we're cool with that. So if you have a player coming out and saying that, it's hard for me now to see a scenario where they try and mend the fence again and then bring him back, especially when they don't know where he's at. So
he's just chilling on the beach. Like, I kind of got to respect that from the guy. You know, he really just said, I don't care.
Who knows where Emmanuel Reynoso is? If you can find him, let us know.
Please, have you seen this man?
Have you seen him? The Portland Timbers are my last loser of the week. They lost 3-2 at LAFC. And Diego Chara got a... This was really funny. This was the funniest thing. This was funnier than the Seattle Sounders comedy performance. Diego Chara, he set the Portland Timbers appearance record across all competitions in this game. It was like 377 all comps appearances to break the record. He's been like, you know, before we clown on him a little bit, like, Diego Chara has been one of the best players at that position since he's been in the league, which is his 14th year now. He's 38 years old. He's still doing it. I think for years there was kind of a fun like rivalry within the rivalry between him and Ozzie Alonso.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Who's like the more badass defensive midfielder. And Diego Chara, I mean, you gotta give it to him. Like, in terms of like two-way presence, D-mids, who bring that bite and that energy and that kind of swagger and that that kind of calmness that we were talking about too at times, though. Like,
but also not like
controlled aggression, but also not calmness at times when he gets yellow cards and red cards. Anyway, this is all a long way of saying that he got a red card in this game against LAFC when it was tied 2-2, and like during this game that he was being celebrated for breaking the single Timbers appearance record. It was fitting. It was such a fitting way to commemorate that record for him to get a red card in the game and then for the Timbers to lose the game.
Yeah.
And I mean, LAFC bammed. Dennis Bwanga scored 2 goals and they got a game winner right at the end of the match. That was, I mean, it was just a banger. That guy scores more bangers than anyone in the league. And
yeah. Can we borrow him for a couple games?
Oh God, the Sounders need him so bad, man. They need him so bad. All right, let's do the winners. Not to sound like a broken record, but Inter Miami absolutely destroyed the New England Revolution.
After conceding again in the first minute.
Exactly.
They love doing that.
It's a carbon copy of the same discussion we were having last week where they get bammed on by the Revs literally like right after kickoff.
It was minute one.
They get bammed on and everyone's like, oh, what a terrible defense. And I was listening to Bradley Wright Phillips talk about this on the post-game wrap-up show. But he was like, yeah, I mean, their defense is pretty bad and they leak a lot of goals. I mean, it doesn't matter when you can score 3 to 5 goals a game like clockwork and you have Messi on your team who's a literal cheat code, not like 16 goal contributions in like 11 or like 10 games, whatever, however many.
Who else is going to win the MVP other than Messi? I mean, seriously.
No one. He's putting up video game numbers. And Inter Miami, as long as they have relative health, it's like, I don't even know if we should play this season. Like they're on like a different planet than everyone else, than pretty much any team I've ever seen in MLS. We say it every week, but like if you're tired of like the Messi hype or whatever, I get it.
But is it hype though anymore? I don't think it's hype.
Or
it's
like not the hype, but just like the constant saturation of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that's valid.
Like I get that, but like I don't know. For me, every time I pull up Inter Miami, I really enjoy watching it. Like they play incredible soccer,
and they have more players than just Messi that are interesting to watch. And now Benjamin Cremaschi's back too.
Oh, I've been
too.
Loving because these are guys that I've known are great players, but like I haven't watched really consistently their game. Like I've seen highlights and stuff, but I haven't watched Barcelona games consistently. So getting to watch Busquets every week, just such a good class player. One of the best of all time at his position in his own right. Jordi Alba's hurt right now, but one of the best left backs of all time. Luis Suarez, one of the best strikers of all time. So it's just, it's pretty fun to watch, man. And like, I see very little scenario where they don't win the Shield and MLS Cup, assuming relative health. Austin FC got the LA Galaxy 2-0, which
no way. I didn't see that one.
I was reading Doyle's same column today and he was saying that Austin FC, they're hot right now. He was saying they're kind of doing the bit where they, are drastically overperforming their expected stats. But it was Austin who did it originally before St.
That's
Louis.
That's true. Yeah. It was Austin and then St. Louis.
So I guess they're kind of doing that again, but like they are definitely hot right now and like topping the Galaxy right now, shutting them out and beating them by multiple goals. Even, you know, they were the home team in this game, so it would have been more impressive if they did it in LA, but they punked the Galaxy pretty good. And I still think the Galaxy are one of the best teams in the league right now.
They just love to give away goals.
It is funny, like for however, like I've praised them a lot because they've been my favorite team to watch for most of the year besides Miami, I would say. And they're still still the LA Galaxy.
Yeah.
Like, don't sleep on us. We're still the Galaxy. We're still going to have ill-timed concessions, and we're still going to lose games that we probably shouldn't lose. But it was weird to see him get shut out in this game. But Austin FC heating up, and Josh Wolf seemingly less on the hot seat. I thought he was gone. I thought he was gone.
How are the pressers?
They've been less hot now that they're winning.
I would expect him to do a victory lap. I'd expect him to be like, I think he's learned that lesson.
I think he did that last time, and then they ended up drastically underperforming the next year. So maybe he's calmed down with that.
I love that.
And then finally, to wrap it up here, Toronto FC. They were losing 1-0 to Orlando City SC late in the game, and they scored 2 goals in quick succession. And I just think, like, if there's any team in the league right now that does have a right to say fuck the haters and dunk on the pundits a little bit, I think Toronto FC is that team. They've still been pretty bad at times. They're still definitely rebuilding, but they're 5-4-1, which 1.6 points per game. They're fourth in the East right now. So I think you got to give credit to their players, and you got to give a lot of credit to John Herdman, former Canadian national team coach, who took over there. And they really did not make a lot of moves to improve a roster that wooden spooned last year. And there's still been some rough moments for them, and they're dealing with Insigne being injured right now. But they are doing a lot better than people expected of them, and I think they deserve continued credit for that. All right, that'll wrap it for winners and losers. So I think we can call it a wrap there. Nice. For episode 30 of Lobbing Scorchers. Thank you as always to everyone for tuning into the show. I know I say it every week, but once again, like, listenership on this has been just way beyond like what we both expected when we started this show. And we really appreciate everyone who tunes in every week and everyone who submits questions and interacts with the tweets. Please, if you haven't already, like, comment, subscribe, write reviews, tell your friends,
tell your parents, talk to the iPad, tell the iPad that Peter Vermees threw across the room.
Join as a paid subscriber if you so choose, but you're not obligated to, and sub to our YouTube. I think that's it. That's going to do it for this one.
We'll see you midweek.
Until next time, we'll probably put it out Wednesday.
Yeah.
We out.
Peace.